drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Rocky. Mike Gilligan joins us as well, as always. Mike, happy 4th of July weekend. How are you doing?
Doing real well, and happy 4th of July to you, Jack, and the rest of everybody out in the Chicagoland area and anywhere your travels may have taken you. We have a scorcher going on today here in Chicago if you're listening from afar, and been a nice day to get out if you can get out before the weather gets too hot. But for those of you that have some afternoon tea times, hydrate and put on some sunscreen. That's all I can tell you.
I love playing golf on the 4th of July weekend. A little bit more crowded than usual, but generally it's a ton of fun. Before we talk about how the 4th of July kind of changes some people's golf plans, let's talk about the John Deere Classic, because there was some news this morning, Mike, as they moved up tee times to try to make sure to fit everybody in.
They did. And what happened, Jack, they're expecting some weather. And obviously in this part of the country, when we get these humid days and these huge, big clouds, just about anything can happen, especially when you're out near that Mississippi River. That tends to throw that event some curveballs. So they're expecting some weather in this afternoon. So as a result, and what they do very often is they have moved the tee times, and they started teeing off at 7:45. And believe it or not, the leaders will actually be going off in just under an hour. So the entire field will be out there while we're playing, because they want to try to get this in before the weather comes in. It's going to be significant based on what some of the reports are going to be, and effectively probably end the balance of the day out there based on the timing, should they have kept the tee times where they were. So, you know, TV dictates a lot, and it will again today. It'll allow some of us to see an earlier conclusion to round three, and then maybe get out, do a little putting and chipping before the rain actually probably comes here.
Doug Gim is the leader right now. What have you seen in his game so far?
Oh, my gosh. I am so impressed and so happy for Doug Gim, because this guy has been at it. And to me, he represents what's great in the game of golf. This guy keeps plugging away, doesn't complain, and just keeps his head down and keeps going. And he has put together a couple of nice rounds, finds himself atop of the leaderboard. And for Doug Gim, this could be that breakout tournament, as the John Deere has done time and time again, has shaped many, many careers in much of a good ways. And I think if Dougie can hang on, this could be the start of something real special for our local favorite, Doug Gim, the pride and joy of Buffalo Grove, born, I think, in Des Plaines. So, believe it or not, I was watching yesterday. Doug played in 2010 with Nick Hardy on the Illinois Junior Golf Association, and their offices are just above us in the Midwest Golf House. And it was reported that he played in 24 of these events that year, and he won 17 times. So you talk about a guy that knows how to dominate and knows how to win when it comes time to. My hope is that he can recall back to 2010 how easy it was, and he can translate it into now with the big boys out in Silvis, Illinois.
Well, Doug Gim was a big winner last week. He's part of our Rocket Mortgage recap as well. Doug Gim finished pretty well last week. What else is in our Rocket Mortgage recap, Mike?
Well, I mean, we watched in an amazing event. Aldrich Potgieter, a young man, 20 years old. The man isn't even old enough to drink a beer in the United States, and yet it looks like he's big enough to drink a lot of them, because he is a big young fella and hits it a country mile. I believe he's the longest player now on tour, but he found himself in a three-way playoff with Max Gracerman and Chris Kirk, and it was interesting. Potgieter had to make a key putt just to get into the playoff, and then he almost lost it in the first couple of playoff holes with a putt that he ran by, and then he ran a chip by on another one, but he made these amazing comeback putts. and he was able to survive long enough where then he just hit it in tight on the final playoff hole and ends up taking all the money. And I'll tell you, though, I felt bad for a guy like Chris Kirk. This guy's been battling a lot of issues on a personal level. I thought he was finally going to break through and get in, you know, get into another win for him. But, you know, he missed a short putt right there on that first playoff hole. But I'll tell you, another guy is Max Gracerman. This guy, I think, is going to be a very formidable professional in the years to come. I was very impressed with how he handled himself down the stretch, although he didn't get the win. I think a guy like Max takes a lot away from Detroit, because all positive stuff, because I think he now realizes what it's going to take for him to finally win. And I think the next time he finds himself in this type of position, he's going to be able to recall back on what happened up in Detroit, and I think he'll be able to close the deal. But I look for a guy like Max to be a very, very formidable player for us, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it's not this Ryder Cup, it might be another one in the future for him.
Speaking of the Ryder Cup, Keegan Bradley played well again this week. What was his performance like? And we'll get into it a lot more in depth later, but should he name himself to the Ryder Cup team?
You know, that seems to be the million-dollar question. And right now, I think a lot of people early on were kind of rolling their eyes at the notion that, you know, Keegan Bradley, a playing captain, are you kidding me? But I'll tell you what, he has turned a lot of doubters into believers. And I think now, to the extent that if Keegan doesn't pick himself, it's now looking like, well, are you really being the best captain? Because I think ego in the beginning says, oh, I want to do this. But I think now, when it becomes as real as it might be, you know, the notion of picking yourself, being the captain, being the number one guy, going to Bethpage, New York, the Big Apple, you know, what is the right thing for you if you're Keegan? And, you know, and I think, you know, that the notion of what a captain has to do has been severely overblown. I think you're basically going with your gut. You're watching some trends, and you're watching and listening to these vice captains. When Arnold Palmer did this back in the early 60s, he was the last to do this. If he did it and he won, he didn't have any vice captains. He did it purely on the input of the other players, and obviously with what he could see. I think if Keegan wants to entertain this thought, if I were him, I would have everybody meet me at an undisclosed location so there would be no media. And I would have a very honest afternoon of golf and a lot of camaraderie with the team that I know is going to be on the team. And I would ask the players, what do you want me to do? And I would have the players make the decision, because it's a team game, and it might be a team decision in a unique situation as Keegan has presented to us. So what would you want to do if you were playing on Keegan's team? Would you want him as a player, as a teammate, and a colleague based on what you're seeing? Or do you expect more of an administrator or guy that's, you know, looking at lineups and doing all that while that golf game is on the shelf? And I don't know that that's going to be the best thing for us, given the Northeastern fans, and nobody understands these people better than the guy that's from the Northeast, and that's Keegan Bradley.
We're recapping the Rocket Mortgage Classic, which happened last week in Detroit. And Mike, there were some winners, there were some losers from last week. Who was your biggest winner at the Rocket Mortgage Classic last week in Detroit?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, we've just mentioned Captain America himself, Keegan Bradley. He jumped up 21 spots on that board on Sunday with a 67, and he continues to, like I said, he makes cuts and he impresses. Now, he didn't win and he didn't finish in the top 25, but he hung around enough to show that, you know, he still got game, and a formidable game at that, and a game that can, you know, that can hold up under the greatest of pressures. And so he's been to the Ryder Cup. I think right now, with nothing changing from here on out, I think Keegan should pick himself. Now, it's funny, you know, you talk about quasi-losers. The one guy that I couldn't believe that came up short was Jake Knapp. You know, they call him the Big Smooth. On the 72nd hole, I thought he was going to get into this thing, and he left the putt short. So I think even the pros know that, you know, 100% of those putts left short are not going in. You cannot leave that putt short, Jake Knapp. So I think he may have been considered one of the losers. And obviously Max Gracerman, although he's not a loser, he just happened to come up short, and he's too good to win. And he reminds me a little of Tommy Fleetwood, who, you know, lost a close one the week before. And these guys, both he and Tommy, you know, need to come through on Sunday at some point here. And I know Tommy knows how to win because he's done it plenty of times overseas. He just can't seem to get it done here. Although Tommy Fleetwood, funny, 42 top 10 finishes, and he's never won in the United States. So I would ask you, Jack, what would you rather, one win or 42 top 10s?
I think I'd rather one win. For me, I'm the type of person who likes to win it. 42 top 10s just makes me feel like I'd have too many bites at the apple and just not be able to actually come all the way through. I'd be getting in my head too much. Can I really not win something? I'd rather have the number one win, I would think. What would you rather have?
Well, I know the bank account, I'd rather the 42 top 10s for
sure. Yeah, that certainly helps the cause a little bit, I guess.
But the difference is you're playing in Augusta and I'm not. And you're playing in the Opens and I'm not, because you just qualified. Unless my money or I can get into these events via, you know, prize money, points, or however, but you're guaranteed to go to Augusta. I'm not necessarily without the win. So that's what you would have. And if you were to win Augusta, well, then you'd have it. But otherwise, I thought that, you know, some of the younger guys like Harry Higgs and Akshay Bhatia, they showed some fire in their bellies on Sunday with 65s to jump up that leaderboard, because these are guys also that we have to start looking to for Ryder Cup ramifications. And both of these guys could figure into things depending on how their next few weeks of the season go. So there were some winners and some losers, but I would tell you right now, you know, Mr. Potgieter is the true winner, and he seems to keep it going this week. He's having a pretty good event out in Silvis, Illinois, at the John Deere. So maybe this was something just what the doctor ordered for his career, because 20 years old, hitting it the way he does, the future looks awfully bright for him.
Certainly does. And, Mike, that's our Rocket Mortgage Classic recap for the day. We'll talk about it a little bit more later as well. But I want to ask you, how was your July 4th? Did you get out? Did you play any golf on the 4th of July? And how was that kind of the 4th of July? I know for a lot of people who play golf every day and have their Saturday tee times, especially when the 4th of July is on a weekend, it can really mess with some things with all the extra people on the course and the tee times and things.
It can. I think you just have to understand who you're playing with, where you're playing, and what time you want to play. Because actually what I've discovered, the best-kept secret to play golf on the 4th of July is to do it, like when you're in the areas of, let's say, Wheaton and Glen Ellen, out where near I live. If you go during the Glen Ellen or Wheaton parade, like Cantini is empty, and so is Arrowhead. But then come after the parade, the tee sheets are booked. So you might have to do a little bit of looking around based on when your parades are, because trust me when I tell you, getting to the golf courses yesterday in the morning was a piece of cake. There was hardly anybody there. But as far as the holiday golf is concerned, it brings out a lot of the newbies, a lot of the guests, a lot of people who maybe never played before, but they're going up to see Uncle John or, you know, Aunt Megan, and they're going to, you know, play a little golf, and it might be the one time they grab their irons out of the tomato garden because they're holding up their plants, and they stick them back in their bag, and they're going to go up and play. So that's where you can also find that the round times can be a little bit longer than what you might have expected on a typical, well, Saturday or typical Friday yesterday. So for me, I tend to use those days as more of a chance to practice, unless you are invited to go play Medina number 3 like Tyler and I were to start our holiday weekend.
Wow.
We started off in a way that I it was probably the best July 3rd that I've ever had. Tyler made friends with a Medina member by the name of Tom Heemsoth, and his buddy John Obarski invited us out, and we got out there at 7:45, and we got to see the new Medina number 3, Tyler and I, up close and personal. And we, believe it or not, we played Medina 3 in just over 4 hours. Now, most people could never play Medina 3 in less than 5, but man, they had us moving, and the golf course couldn't have been in better shape. I have been around Medina for years. I've grown up, you know, going there ever since I was in elementary school with some friends that were members there. And at no time have I ever seen a golf course as good a shape as Medina number 3 is right now. I was absolutely blown away. But the look of the golf course is completely different in many, many ways. And I think in a lot of great ways, the panoramic views that they now give are just awesome. But there's a lot of trees missing. And that was the one thing that really stood out in my mind. I was like, I couldn't believe how open it was. And I think missing some of those trees is going to be hard for some of the old timers who know that golf course as the monster at Medina, you know, with the big trees that sit up on those gigantic hills, and they just look larger than life. And a lot of those are now gone. But did we have a day of a day? I mean, the weather couldn't have been better. We had a great four caddy, and just the hospitality from Todd and John was unbelievable. And it was so fun. And for me, it was like reliving memories because I worked there for close to 3 years. And it was funny, Todd, when I first met him, he asked me, "Have you ever been here before?" And I was like, "Well, I have." And then lo and behold, throughout the day, we kept running into all kinds of people, from the locker room attendants to my good friend Don Larson, who was our general chairman of the 1999 PGA Championship, and just running into a ton of old friends throughout the club and, you know, just catching up. And that's what golf allows us to do. It allows us to reacquaint ourselves, even if places we used to be. And when you go back, what's that common denominator? It's the golf. It's the memories. It's the events. And it was just interesting to get the take from the Medina members on what they think about their new golf course, and for those that have played it and for those that are still waiting to play it. But it seems that there's a bit of a divide in the membership, whether you like it or you not. And it'll be interesting to see where it all comes up. But I think the players are going to love what they see when they arrive for the President's Cup next year. I think it'll be a great President's Cup golf course to compete on. I'll be interested to see, because you know the BMW is eventually going to come back. So if that comes back, you know, by the end of this decade in some way, shape, or form, I'll be interested to see how they play this particular version of Medina 3 in a stroke play fashion versus what the President's Cup will be. It'll be more match play and what I call more exhibition, if you will. So a lot of cool stuff coming up for the members at Medina. They have every right to be excited about that golf course because it truly is a ton of fun to play.
You gave a ton of great information there, Mike, but you missed the really important one. How'd you shoot? How'd you shoot at Medina?
Well, I actually did okay. I hit 15 greens in regulation, and for me, that's a lot. And so I was able to make 3 birdies and 5 bogeys, so I shot 37, 37, 74. And par there is 37, 35.
So oh, interesting.
A little bit different. Yeah, it's a little bit different there in that regard. But just holes 13 through 18, for those who know the old Medina 3, you're in for a wild one. It is really, really fun. But, you know, people have asked me, is it as hard? I just don't think that it is. Anytime you start removing the amount of trees that you did, I just can't imagine that it's any harder. It might be about the same. But I think with some of the trees missing, I think some of the intimidation, if you will, because there's a few holes there that I would just be like swinging scared versus now it looks like it's more open. And maybe that's more of a mental thing and it's just me. But at the same time, it's going to be a successful course, no doubt. It is just a lot of fun. If you've never seen the old Medina 3, then you'll just straight out love this.
This is the CDGA Golf Show brought to you by Fox Bend Golf Course. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Aki with Mike Gilligan. When we come back, golf.com had a really cool survey with some fun questions that Mike and I are going to dive into. We also have some fun questions for you guys. 312-332-3776. Give us a call. Talk to us about your 4th of July and your 4th of July golf outings. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Illinois Bone and Joint Institute is proud to present the Chicago Adaptive Open at IBJI. They're dedicated to helping you move better so you can live better. Their expert team delivers compassionate, high-quality care with state-of-the-art imaging, convenient rehab locations, and 14 ortho access immediate care facilities for same-day orthopedic treatment. With more than 150 physicians in 100 locations throughout Chicagoland, they offer expertise in every orthopedic specialty. From injury to recovery, IBJI is here for you. Get the close-to-home care you deserve. Visit IBJI.com to learn more.
Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. The CDGA Golf Show is brought to you by Golf Elgin. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Rocky with Mike Gilligan. We got a lot of fun stuff for you today here on the 5th of July for the holiday weekend. MikeGolf.com published a really fun survey, and we can answer some of these questions throughout the show, but it asked 10,000 golfers a bunch of questions about their preferences, and I want to get your answers to some of these. So the one I want to start with is, this is a really fun one. Dream course, random foursome, or random course, dream foursome? Which one would you choose?
Well, wow, that's interesting. You know, because I think the fallback is, you know, you want Augusta, right? So that would be your dream course. But, you know, if you could do a dream foursome at a random course, I think my random course would be locally here. One of my favorites is either Shore Acres or Glen Oak Country Club. I mean, it's not the Medinas or the Olympia Fields. But if I could put a dream foursome together, it would easily be Elvis Presley. It would be Tiger Woods, and it would be Michael Jordan and myself.
Oh, I like the Michael Jordan one. I like the idea of putting in a non-professional golfer in there. I think that'd be a ton of fun. Bill Murray, I think, is one that a lot of people answered as somebody who would be fun to play some golf with because he's a funny guy, right? And he obviously has the golf movies and likes golf himself. I think Tiger Woods has to be up there, and I Bryson DeChambeau, he was not a lot of people's favorite person, but the way he's able to crush the ball, I almost want to play with him just because I feel like I have to see it up close and personal, how hard he's able to hit the thing.
Well, of course, and I think, Bryson, you bring up a great point. I think if you would ask this question on golf.com, say, 6-7 years ago, Bryson probably wouldn't have gotten many votes at all, but I think now he may be one of the most popular choices given how he has absolutely flipped the script on, you know, the way he carries himself and is Mr., you know, social media golfer. So, and here's a guy that actually took LIV and actually parlayed it in a way that was very, very positive for him and his career. And it's weird how he's actually created a situation where the golfing world would love to see him come back. So he was able to do that. But I agree with you. What he can do to a golf ball is absolutely short of amazing. And if you've never seen him hit it actually in person, it just sounds different. It feels different. And it just flies at a different speed and height than anybody else out there.
I'm with you. 60% of people agree with us. They'd rather have their dream foursome and play with their dream foursome on a random course than play their dream course with a random foursome. This is another question I found really interesting. Do you track each shot during your rounds, meaning add up your score after each shot, or do you just use your hole-by-hole scores and not think about it? 14% of people said they always track their score in their head as they go along. And I have some bad news, Mike. I'm one of those people. I know you're not supposed to do it, but I do. I'm always tracking my score in my head. I always know where I'm at.
Yeah, I think I do too for the most part. But I can tell you, though, that anytime I play very, very good, I do lose track of where I'm at. And I like that because then at that point, I don't want to know. I just keep trying to stay present in what I'm doing and the task at hand because – And I don't know if anyone else is out there that has done this, but every time I find myself thinking, oh, I've got three holes to play, I'm only one over, gosh, even if I just make a couple of bogeys coming in, I'm still going to break 40. No problem, right? Guess what? You'll shoot 40 or worse because you've now started taking yourself out of what you're doing, the good swing thoughts, the positive things to think about, and now you're more worried about the result instead of the process. And I think when we start gauging on the results so much more, the process unravels, and then the entire game unravels, and then the results are far worse than even when you thought you painted out a picture. Like, even if this happens, I'll still do this. And ultimately,
yep, that's where I'm
off
at.
The golf course going, how did I just make two double bogeys coming in? Because you took your mind off of what you were doing.
No, yeah, I go in and I always try to. I'm a bogey golfer, so my goal is always I'm trying to break 90 every single round I go out there. And I'm always in as a bogey golfer. I get my occasional birdies, but it's not like I'm putting up multiple birdies around. And I go in and I wind up doing it to myself where I add up my score and I'm towards the end and I'm like, oh, you know, if I birdie the last three holes, I can still break 90 today. And that's what I wind up doing every time. And I'm like, there's no chance of that happening. But that winds up being my goal. And then maybe I play more aggressively than I should, trying to cut the lake or the dog leg or trying to go over the water when I know I can't reach it. And it really screws up my round.
Well, what you should do is let somebody else keep track of your score and never report it to you. So you just don't know.
It's fair. I should do that.
You will break 90 much faster than if you know. And, you know, and you've got to also make sure the person that's playing golf with doesn't tell you on the 17th green that all you got to do is this. Because it's the same thing even with one hole left, even with two shots left. You have to stay in the presence. And if you are in the present, and if you ask any of these PGA Tour pros, the Doug Gims of the world, the Tommy Fleetwoods, the Max Holmes, the hardest thing in the world to do is to stay present on each and every shot for 18 consecutive holes, four rounds, including practice rounds. So, I mean, even when they practice, I mean, I would ask you, Jack, when you practice and you go to the range, do you practice with a purpose or do you just go out and hit golf balls and where are they going? Well, they're going out there. Do you aim every single range ball that you hit?
So what happens is, and I think this is probably what a lot of people do, is I start aiming them, and then as I grow more frustrated because the ball isn't going where I wanted, I just start hitting the ball out of spite, thinking, oh, I'll just get the next one. And I just go up there and start slamming it. What I should be doing is practicing with a purpose, like you're saying, and I'm sure a lot of people do the same thing like me, where they just go up and they just start crushing it after a little bit of time.
No, that's exactly it. And what I find a lot of people when they say, hey, would you mind watching me hit a few? Sure. The first question I'll ask them is, well, where are you aiming? And they'll just point out there. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just moderately west. So, like, what target out in the west are you? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That tells me right away you're not aiming. So there's no reference point for you to realize, am I set up right? Am I closed, am I open, and all the rest of it. So, yeah, it's the funny game, but you've got to practice every shot like it's the real thing. And Jack Nicklaus claims that he's never hit a practice ball without it being properly aimed. Even myself, I find myself going, wait, where am I aiming? Because I'm just like hitting balls, and it's like I'm a machine. But you don't get better doing that. You get better through quality practice, not quantity. I would rather see people practice only for 20 minutes and aim every single ball than to be able to come back all sweaty and say, I just hit balls for an hour. How'd you hit them? I don't know. I just pounded them all. I just may have practiced a bad habit. So quality practice over quantity. Every day, all day.
We'll dive into more of those survey questions a little bit later as well. If you guys want to dive in, 312-332-3776. You can answer those questions as well. We got a lot of them, including, do you like music on the course? Do you use a rangefinder? Do you think rangefinders should be used in the PGA? All of those things. We'll answer those questions in a bit. Coming up next, though, we've got Craig DeVries. He's covering the John Deere Classic for PGATour.com. We'll talk to him next. That's coming up on the CDGA Golf Show, brought to you by Golf Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Welcome back to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, brought to you by Tullymore, Jack McGrath, in for Tyler Aki with Mike Gilligan. Happy 4th of July weekend. I hope you got out there to play some golf this weekend. And right now we bring in a very special guest. It's Craig DeVries, who is writing about the John Deere Classic for PGATour.com. Craig, how are you today?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
Doing great.
Craig, hey, good to have you on today, and I know you've been covering the John Deere Classic since about, I think, 1984. In your opinion, and I know you've seen a lot of tour golf over the years, what makes this tournament unique compared to any of the others that the guys go to throughout the calendar season?
Well, I don't know if it's completely unique, but obviously the launching pad reputation that we have here as a, you know, a tournament that often was played opposite the British Open and also kind of in proximity to, and maybe has what some would consider not the strongest fields, but this year numerically it is the strongest field that they've ever had here. But what it is, the launching pad nature. You know, we've had Payne Stewart win here in the early years, and then obviously with Jordan Spieth emerging out of that bunker in 2013 and Bryson DeChambeau coming right behind him, and Brian Harman winning the year in 2014. I mean, we give young players a good chance, and often they take advantage. I think that would be our calling card here in the Quad Cities.
Talking to Craig DeVries, who's writing about the John Deere Classic for PGATour.com. Craig, you talk about it, the John Deere Classic being a launching pad for a lot of these careers. Are there any young players in this year's field that you're particularly excited about?
Well, we got the top three amateurs in the world playing, we've got Gordon Sargent and had Luke Clinton making their third professional start. So, particularly Jackson Coivin. He was a freshman player of the year, won all four awards, the only player to ever sweep those awards. He's now number one in the world in the amateur rankings, going back to Auburn for his junior year next month. He actually comes to the Quad Cities with Quad City roots. His father is a Moline High School graduate, and he's more than just, you know, another shiny young gun coming through here. He's a guy who a lot of people were doctored by George Coivin's father back in the day. So there's some roots here, and there's some story there. And Jackson Coivin started slow on Thursday, like everybody did in the afternoon, but he came in at 8-under at 7-under for his round and 8-under for the tournament yesterday. So he's actually on the board, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, and you'd mentioned, Craig, how this is the launching pad. And, you know, for all of us more in the Chicagoland area, we've got our eyes keenly on Mr. Dougie Gim. And he's having quite a nice run there. Given the announcement this morning, and I know the guys are now already starting to tee off because we're expecting some weather out your way, you know, I was really hoping Max didn't make that bogey coming in, because I would have loved to have seen what would have happened had Doug and Max played together. Because if you take a look at the top six or seven players up on the leaderboard, you guys have a fine potpourri of a defending champion. You've got people who have never won. You've got Max Homa coming back. You got the international side of Emilio Grillo in the hunt.
See,
so
him right
you
there.
Got a lot of stuff happening this weekend,
yeah.
Out in Silvis.
Yeah, and that always happens. It's always a bunched leaderboard, Doug Gim is just minutes away from his 9:55 tee time as they're going off early in threesomes. So yeah, he'll be playing with Davis Thompson and Brian Campbell, an Illinois grad who won earlier this year, took down Aldrich Potgieter and down in Mexico. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting stories. Like I said, Steve Woo Kim, who was my sleeper pick because of his Steph Curry imitation at the President's Cup, you know, the sleeper. So he's there at 10 under, and Camilo Villegas is, you never know when he's going to pop up on a leaderboard. Emiliano Grillo is a really good player. So, yeah, there's a lot of action and a lot of names that some folks will know, some folks won't. But Doug Gim is an interesting story. He's been steady, looking to wire to wire. Looking, obviously, for his first win, which would make him the 25th first-time champion in 54 events here in the Quad Cities. And he'd be, obviously, he'd be very worthy and popular winner coming from Chicagoland. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he can hold up.
How's the weather right now up by you? Is it still looking clear, or are we starting to get some of that rain in yet?
No, it's getting a little overcast, but it's not. It doesn't look like rain's going to be here for a while.
So, Craig, do you think that we're going to have a champion come out of the house this year? Because Davis Thompson's up there. He might even come out of the same bed.
Yeah, if you have a headline, it's Bet the House. The Trophy House has had a heck of a run of success. 3 for 3, and Davis Thompson's right there. Playing really good golf, obviously comfortable on this golf course. It's been a while. He has not really validated his success here last year when a lot of the his peers, including Zach Johnson and the guys at the house, said that this is a kid with talent to play on, you know, Ryder Cup teams and possibly contend in major events. But he's really laconic. I mean, very very outwardly. Call him, and he talked a lot about it yesterday, about being nonchalant, playing nonchalant. He doesn't really appear to have a pulse sometimes, but his wife is fun. She called him a national treasure last year after he won, and you don't get a lot of wives calling their husbands national treasures. I asked her if that put a little pressure on him in the house. You know, I mean, you know, if you forget to take out the trash, do you lose your national treasure status? I don't know.
So, Craig, you have, you know, written a book on the trials and tribulations, but more or less the successes of how this event out in, you know, the western part of our state has evolved over the years. And much like you said, Payne Stewart got his first win on the PGA Tour many moons ago in the Quad Cities in Illinois. And then he went on and he also got his first major win here at Kemper Lake. So, you know, it's an interesting story. And for a lot of people, they don't realize that John Deere now is the second longest running title sponsorship next to AT&T.
Second only to AT&T.
Right. And so, but there was a time this event almost went away. Can you fill us in a little bit on that?
There were multiple times that this event almost went away. Existential crises, if I was able to pronounce that word, I would call it. But, one time they, in 75, the event was 3 years old and 4 years old and looking for a new golf course. That happened when a Pete Dye built course called Oakwood emerged and actually, in many instances, the fact that Dean Beeman was the first winner and the second winner of the Quad Cities Open when it was at a Bettendorf club called Crow Valley really played in the tournament's favor because Dean, he worked in their favor. He helped them quite a bit. Always it was a struggle to find real corporate support in the early days. John Deere wasn't ready to step up, wasn't in a position to step up. And there was a concern that they were going to support an event that might not come back and they would take the blame for it. So in those early years, the farm crisis was ongoing. Got through with Hardee's, and then they had a fateful meeting back in 1996 in the John Deere headquarters and discussed ways that John Deere might leverage the tournament, and out of the blue, Duke Butler, who was the vice president for tournament relations, just proposed a TPC golf course and a partnership with Deere's very fledgling golf and turf equipment to become the exclusive supplier for the PGA Tour, and that just sent things just spiraling just on a rocket ride to where we are now, which is really a solid and stable event on the PGA Tour. Deere and Company just renewed for 6 more years through 2030. So it is an amazing story that we got to the point where Deere could step up, that Deere had in the midst of the farm crisis created a golf and turf equipment division, and that it just occurred to Duke on on a whim to suggest the TPC course here with a equipment partnership. It's just an amazing story. So yeah, I had the privilege of telling that story, and I really enjoyed it. I've actually shared that. There's not a lot of books left. The tournament printed 2,000 of them, but I actually shared that on my blog site, my Substack site, all 16 chapters. It's an amazing story. So if somebody wanted to find it there, they could find me on Substack and read really pretty amazing story.
So you've covered this tournament for years. Of all your years covering the tournament, what is your favorite memory of the John Deere Classic?
That's so easy. It is 2015. Jordan Spieth came back here after winning the Masters and the U.S. Open. And 3 hours after the U.S. Open, actually minutes after the U.S. Open, he announced in his press conference that he was going to come play the Deere and take the charter to St. Andrews, which a lot of people said was absolutely insane. And he was resolute in keeping his commitment. He came here. He said, I'm not here to I'm not thinking about the Claret Jug. I want to win the John Deere Trophy first, and he did in a playoff. Coming birdieing like 5 of the last 6 holes on the backstretch, and so he went to St. Andrews with a chance to become the only the second player behind Ben Hogan to win all 3 of the first 3 majors in a year, and he came within a shot of doing it, and the guy that beat him, or the guy that took the Claret Jug home, was actually on the jet with him. It was Zach Johnson, who he had defeated in the playoff in 2013 here. So yeah, that's all part of the magic of magic happened here at the John Deere Classic.
So Craig, where can people find your Substack and get your book?
Well, I'm not real skilled at promoting my own stuff, but if you'd like to find the link here, it's Substack. Craig's Substack is what it's called. It's called Quad City Sports Histories, which I hope to expand on a few more as we go forward. So,
And Magic Happened is the name of your book. You said the two are printed, some of those as well.
I can't give you a URL here, but it's craigdevries.substack.com. How about that?
All right, look at that.
There you go.
Nice and easy for you. craigdevries.substack.com. Magic Happened is the name of your book. Who's your pick to win the John Deere Classic?
I'd love to say Doug Gim because, he's due. He's a good player. He's been really really talkative after rounds, but I pick Siwoo Kim as a sleeper again, and I think he'll do that Steph Curry move on 18 on Sunday.
Wow.
Great to hear it, Craig.
About that. And I'm never right about those things, by the way. So I talked about actually opening a cottage business where I offer not to pick guys for pay. So it's not to jinx them.
That's funny. All right, Craig DeVries, he's covering the John Deere Classic for PGAtour.com. He also has a book out called Magic Happened. Thank you for joining us, Craig. I hope you have a great 4th of July weekend as the John Deere Classic wraps up. There's already been some movement kind of near the top of the leaderboard. We will catch you up on that when we come back. This is the CDGA Golf Show brought to you by Tullymore.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. Presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Welcome back into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, brought to you by Tour Edge. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Rocky with Mike Gilligan. And the John Deere Classic is currently underway. The leaders of the tournament teeing off shortly because of some changes in time due to weather. Doug Gim is 12 under. He's in first place. Kevin Roy is 1 under. He birdied his first hole, and so he's 11 under on the tournament, 1 under through today, through just one hole, so he birdied his first one. He's in a six-way tie for second place. Max Homa, another notable name, tied for second place. And then making some movement on the leaderboard, Lee Hodges is in a tie for ninth place. He's 3 under on the day through four holes, 10 under total on the tournament. Mike, what are your initial thoughts on the leaderboard here?
Well, I think the golf course is gettable, and I think you we also see a guy, also Zach Blair. He's quickly gone out to 3 under through 6, and he's climbed up 20 spots for tied for 16.
And so, as we speak, Cameron Champ actually just eagled hole number 2, so now he's in a tie for the lead as well at 12 under.
So I anticipate just the theme of the weekend to continue. More and more fireworks. I think this thing is going to be a real shootout, and it's going to be an exciting one. It never disappoints out there out in John Deere country. And, you know, who knows? We could get somebody that we haven't even mentioned yet, like Denny McCarthy. That's sort of the guy that I'm keeping an eye on as well. If it can't be Dougie, then I want it to be Denny.
That's our John Deere leaderboard update. This is the CDGA Golf Show, brought to you by Tour Edge. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Rocky with Mike Gilligan. When we come back, we're going to continue to break down the John Deere Classic, and we'll dive more into that golf.com survey with all the best questions that we have for you guys. 312-332-3776. Give us a call. Tell us about your 4th of July weekend golf plans. We're also going to dive into, as part of the survey, what is your biggest gripe on the golf course? What's your biggest pet peeve? We'll dive into all of that when we come back on the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. How's your golf game? Yeah, mine too, but more on that later. It's time for more golf talk on the CDGA Golf Show, your guide to golf around the world and in your neighborhood. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
It's the CDGA Golf Show, brought to you by Geneva National. Jack McGrath in for Tyler Rocky with Mike Gilligan. And Mike, there are a lot of good questions on this golf.com survey, and one of them I want to ask you, there's two about golf apparel, and I want to ask you this one. Should golfers be permitted to play in whatever attire they choose? And then it gives examples.